Please take a Bible and open up to Colossians chapter 1. This is on page 1182 of the Church Bibles. Colossians chapter 1. Page 1182. Okay, and I'm going to be reading from verses 15 to 23 of chapter 1. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation, if you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel. This is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant.
Thank you very much, Amy. I've got here an exercise that comes from a booklet called Image and Self-Projection. And the exercise goes like this. You get a friend, and you ask the friend to say to you, Maria, that's if you're called Maria, presumably, Maria, you are a beautiful, lovable, and worthy person. And Maria replies, yes, I know. Repeat 10 times. Then Maria says, I, Maria, am a beautiful, lovable, and worthy person. And the friend replies, yes, Maria, you certainly are. Repeat 10 times. Maria is trying to improve her self-image. She isn't happy with who she is. She wants to be somebody different. She wants to be the true her. And the rest of the tone of the booklet is that the true her is someone who is independent, someone who is successful, someone who gets what they want, someone who is self-actualizing. I wonder if we've ever felt like Maria, wanting a new image, wanting to be the true, real us. Mind you, we have to wonder if Maria's exercise is going to work for her. The very reason she's doing the exercise is because she doesn't believe she is lovable and worthy. Part of the reason she doesn't believe she's lovable and worthy is because her friends have treated her in such a way to make her think she isn't lovable and worthy. So what she's actually doing is telling herself something she doesn't believe, and asking her friends to tell her something which her friend doesn't demonstrate in the way they behave. So it's hardly persuasive. Secondly, we've got to ask, is Maria aiming at the right self-image? She thinks that if she can become Ms. Self-Actualizing, then she'll be happy. She thinks that's the right image for her, but is it? Now you might think, well, it's up to her to choose her self-image. But what if, as we've been thinking tonight, rather than us being here by chance, we were created by a personal, purposeful God? I know that's a big if, and you might like to look into that, if. But if we were created by a God, surely it would make us ask, what did he make us to be? What image did he have in mind when he made us? Well, that's the question we're going to try and answer tonight. Now, can I just start with a quick apology? I did say last week we would say something about homosexuality this week. But I've decided that it would be foolish to try and cover gender and homosexuality. We're hardly going to cover gender. These are such big topics and such important topics. I've decided that to say a little could be a lot worse than saying nothing at all. But I do want to quickly say homosexuality is obviously a reality. In a group this size, there will be people facing that issue personally. And it's something we need to think about and talk about. And unfortunately, we're often quiet on it. And sadly, I'm not going to help with that tonight, so I'm sorry for that. If you do want to hear more, can I recommend the tapes that are available? There are two tapes on that subject, as well as other tapes on these range of subjects we've been looking at this week and last week. And they're available from a sort of table over there under the gallery. Or if you'd like to speak about that issue, can I say, please do phone the church office. Just say you'd like to speak to a member of staff, perhaps a member of staff you know and would be happy speaking to. Now, let's turn back to our topic. What did God create us to be? What is our true image? Well, let's turn back in the Bibles, if you've got them in your hand, to page 4, Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, right at the start, page 4. And I'm going to read Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26 on the left-hand side there. Genesis 1:26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Our true image is this. We are created male and female in the image of God. That's our first kind of section, if you like. We're created male and female in the image of God. Now, I wonder which, out of those two, male and female, image of God, which you would say is the more important? Well, the way these verses go, it sounds like image is more important. Verse 26 mentions it, then verse 27 mentions it twice, and you get male and female at the end. Later on in Genesis, God says you must never murder anybody because, and the reason is, they are in the image of God. He doesn't give the reason to be because they are a man or a woman. It does seem that being in the image of God is the foundational truth about us. Now that's quite a striking thought. If we are made in the image of God, then who we are is defined by him. So if we want to know ourselves, if we want to know our true selves, we've got to know God. Now, we haven't got time to go into all the different things being in the image of God means. The thing we're particularly interested in tonight is that we are made like God. We're in his image in that we are able to relate. God is a personal, relating God, and he makes us personal and able to relate to one another, and supremely to him, to know him as our God. We are in the image of God. That is the foundational truth about us. And because that's the foundational truth, it means we are all equal. We're all in the image of God. However, we are also created male and female. We are created different. We're not just created as people or humans, we're created men and women. Gender is God intended and God made. And so it is significant. The difference between the sexes is not merely sort of physiological. We are made as men and women. Gender is part of who we are. It affects how we relate to one another. We don't relate just as people, we relate as men and women to women and men. Now, the Bible goes on to describe how this difference in gender works out in practice, the different roles it leads to for men and women. Now, the word roles I don't like. It's a bit sort of stiff. What it's really describing is how we relate, how we interact in our difference. So, for instance, an obvious difference is that women have the primary role in child rearing. And the flip side of that, the Bible says, is that the man ought to provide for and care for the family. Now, don't get me wrong here. This isn't an exclusive thing. This isn't a rigid role. Doesn't mean men don't have anything to do with children or women can't earn money. They're not fixed, exclusive roles. But the Bible is saying that gender differences are significant, and that works out in practice, so that to a significant degree we have different roles. We see this in the New Testament. Another example, in marriage, where we're told men are to love their wives and to lead them by laying down their lives for them, sacrificially. And women are to submit, to let the man love them in that way. Now, don't get me wrong, submitting doesn't mean the woman is to be subservient, it doesn't mean she can't make decisions, it doesn't mean the man runs her life. These aren't rigid roles, they're not fixed. But gender is real. We are different. And it is significant, and it works itself out in real, significant differences in the way we relate and interact and the roles we take. Now, those are just two examples. Gender doesn't just affect those who are married and those who have children. It affects all of us in every relationship, in the way we interact. It is part of who we are, and it is significant. Now, there's much more we could say about roles and all that sort of thing, but today, in our sort of highly charged PC society, to suggest that, or to talk about women bringing up children and husbands leading wives, means you could just about be shot. It sounds outrageous to people today, might sound outrageous to you, and it sounds like the sort of thing that would lead women, that has led women to be oppressed and abused. So let's be reminded that the Bible, when it says these things, doesn't mean that. Let's be clear, the Bible says we are equal. And we are equal because of what we said earlier, because we are all made in the image of God. And that is the foundational truth about us. Men, male and female are equally in God's image, so they are equally valuable and significant and important. But the Bible does say at the same time, we are different. That is the image the Bible holds up for us. We are equal, but different. However, those who complain about women being oppressed and abused are quite right. While the Bible's image may not suggest that, that does actually happen in our experience. Now, why is that? Why have women and sometimes men been mistreated? Well, that's our second section, and I've called it the distorted image. First of all, the true image, male and female, equal, but different. Now, the distorted image, manipulation and domination. That's the distorted image, manipulation and domination. In the next chapter of Genesis, Genesis chapter 3, we read of Adam and Eve eating the forbidden fruit. And the significance of them doing that is that they are rejecting God as their maker, their ruler. And as you might imagine, if being made in God's image is the fundamental truth about us, then rejecting God is the fundamental disaster that we could commit. And the Bible explains that having rejected God, every area of life is then distorted in some way. Most significantly of all, our relationship with God is distorted. We're cut off from Him. We don't know Him anymore. But also our relationships with each other are distorted, between men and women are distorted. If you turn to Genesis chapter 3 and verse 16, right at the bottom of page 5, this is God saying, these are the consequences of you rejecting me. Actually, let's go to the top of page 6. So the woman, he says, I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing. With pain you will give birth to children. Your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Your desire will be for your husband. Now, that word desire doesn't mean sort of sexual desire. If you flip your eyes across to chapter 4 and verse 7, We see the same word using again. The Lord is talking to Cain, and he says, halfway through verse 7, if you do that, but if you do not do that, what is right, sin is crouching at your door, it desires to have you, but you must master it. Desire there is to master. Sin desires to master Cain, but he must master sin. And that's what's been said in 3:16. The woman's desire will be for her husband. She will want to master her husband, control him. But he will rule over you. That is, the man will dominate her and rule over her harshly. History bears out the truth of that statement. Women try to manipulate and control men. They use their gender and their sexual attraction to try and get their way. Inside, they can despise and ridicule men. Men abuse women, treat them as sex objects, disdain their work in childcare and the home, and mock them. One of the reasons our friend Maria is having to try and improve her self-image is that she has been badly treated by men. Whether it's the demeaning comment about her abilities or a wolf whistle along the street. The evidence for this statement is all around us. In fact, the evidence for this statement is in our own lives. We might not want to admit it, but if we're honest, we mistreat other people. We mistreat the other gender. In thought and word and in our actions. Sure, we can find people who are worse. But the truth is, no one is innocent of these gender crimes. No one here tonight is innocent. This is the distorted image of God which affects us all, characterized by domination and manipulation. The question is, how should we react to this? How can we change this distorted image and get back to what we're meant to be? Well, one answer on offer today is feminism. And that's our third section. We've had the true image, the distorted image, now feminism. I've called this the sexless image. We must say that much of the feminist movement is right and has done much good in highlighting how men mistreat women and working for equality for women. However, the image feminism holds up for us to strive for is a sexless human. Feminism says men and women are identical. That is, there's no significant gender difference. Any sexual differentiation, any gender difference, gender role difference, is culturally produced. Listen to a feminist writer that described this. She writes, women seek a reconstruction of relationships which can give each person the fullness of their being, stolen from them by false polarization. The term for this in the women's movement is androgyny. Androgyny, the idea we are sexless humans. We have no significant gender difference. And the thought of that writer is that reconstructing this state of affairs will give people the fullness of their being. They will be fulfilled. They will be all that they are meant to be. They will have found their true image. And what this means in practice is that women must be able to do what men do, particularly in the workplace. Same jobs, pay, status. If we are made identical, then we should be identical in how we live. Indeed, to be equal, we must be identical. Now, what are we to think of that? Is that the right image to work for? Well, I think it's hard to believe that is the right image, the sexless image, because there is so much evidence that men and women are different. Let me mention some of the evidence on a sort of popular level, perhaps not a particularly consequential one, but a popular level. There are books like John Drane's Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, suggesting we're not any different, we're from different planets. Now, if you read it, while you may find it very annoying, as I did, it does contain some truth. It's generalized, it sort of overdoes it, but it does point out differences between how men and women work and relate. There's evidence from anthropology. In every society, at all times, there have been different roles for each gender. There's always been a division of labour along gender lines. There's always been male leadership of some sort. Now, if those differences in role are just culturally determined, you have to ask, why does every culture choose to do things the same way? Now, it might be purely because of physiological factors. But it does begin to suggest there is a more significant difference between men and women. Of course, what you want to really decide this issue is an experiment where a whole group, society is established where men and women have identical lifestyles, same jobs, same time with their children, same time in the home. And then we would see whether these roles really were culturally determined or were innate. Well, that experiment has been done. In the 1950s, a kibbutz in Israel was established that had a unisex lifestyle with no sexual differentiation. By 1975, the women in the kibbutz were demanding more time with their children, the opportunity to have more children, more time in the home, and were turning down the male sort of status jobs so they could do that. They had to ask to be allowed to do it. Lastly, there's evidence from the educationalists. Children from a very young age, far before you'd have thought culture had influenced them, show certain strengths along gender lines. So boys are more adept at external objects, they've got stronger motor skills, they're better at maths. Girls have greater awareness of other people, they're more relational. They've got a better disposition to aesthetics and to sort of philosophical type things. It's hard to deny that there are innate differences between male and female. And if that's right, if there are innate differences, then feminism is working for the wrong image. The really odd thing I think about feminism is that they're actually working for a male image. In saying we must be like men, particularly in career, they're saying your job, your status, your salary, the things that men sort of allegedly have, those are things that define your worth. Well, I wonder if you want to accept that. I know a woman who used to be well paid in a corporate job. In the feminist mind, she was doing well. She was valuable and worthy. But then she decided to leave her job and to have children and to stay at home and bring them up. Has she now decreased in value? Well, the feminists would have to say she has. Because they insist you must be like a man. The great sadness of this is that motherhood and childhood has been demeaned and devalued. First of all by men in their domination, and now by women seeking equality. Because they've defined equality as being identical to a man. And that is a very poor and very male-dominated definition of value. The feminist sexless image is the wrong image. And because it's wrong, it won't work. It won't lead to equality, and it won't lead to freedom, and it won't lead to the fullness of your being. So how should we respond to the distortion we see in our lives and relationships? Well, instead of going for the sexless image, we should return to our true image, what we were made for. The question is, though, how can we get there, distorted and cut off from God as we are? How can we regain that true image that we were made for? Well, why don't you turn back to the reading we had from Colossians. You'll find it on page 1182. Page 1182. Listen to how Paul describes Christ at the start of this section. Chapter 1 and verse 15. He, Christ, is the image of the invisible God. Now, do we realize the significance of that? Christ is the image of God. Christ is the true image. Christ is our true image. In him, the image has been restored. Christ, as fully God and fully human, shows us what God and the image of God is like. And so shows us how the image can be restored. That's our last section, the true image restored in Christ. Let me mention two ways in which he shows us what the true image is like. Christ, first of all, shows us you can be equal, but different. He shows us you can be equal, but different. Now, he shows us this in what Christians call the Trinity. That is, God is Father, Son, and Spirit. Now, I'm not asking you to necessarily accept the Trinity tonight. I'm just saying that if that's true, if Jesus is fully God and the Father is fully God, then we can see how you can be equal but different. You see, it goes like this. If Christ is fully God, if he's divine, then he's equal to his Father, who's God. He's equal in value. That's where his value lies, in who he is. He's God. Yet Christ makes it very clear he has a different role to his Father. He says things like this. He says, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can only do what he sees his Father doing. Or another time he says, I do nothing on my own, but speak only what the Father taught me. Christ, in his actions and his words, says, I'm submitted to my Father. But in submitting himself, he doesn't become any less than the Father. His value isn't affected, because he's valuable in who he is. He's God. So he's free to have a different role. He is equal with God, but different. Now remember, feminism says to be equal, you must be identical. But Christ, the true image of God, says you can be equal but different. If your value is in who you are, for us, the image of God, made in the image of God, valued by God, you are free. Free to be different, free to relate as men and women. Equal, but different. The second way Christ shows us our true image, the true image of God, is that he shows us how to relate to each other. He shows us how to relate to each other. Christ, as we just said, was God on earth. But how did he treat us? How did he relate to us? Well, instead of demanding that we serve him, he chose to serve us. That's what he was doing when he died. If you look down in that reading again, Colossians, page 1182, verse 21, the new paragraph at the bottom of the page. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight. We're cut off from God, he says, but through Christ's death he has reconciled you. He's brought you back to him, back into a relationship with him. And Christ's death does that because in his death he takes everything that you and I have done wrong. The ways we've mistreated God, the way we've mistreated each other, our gender crimes. He takes them all onto himself and says, I'll take responsibility for them. I'll take God's judgment on them so you can be forgiven and reconciled to God. Now, he didn't have to do that. He chose to do that. He chose to serve us. He said no to his rights. And said, I will seek your good. Now, in doing that, we see our true image. We see how we are to relate to one another. That in all our relationships, where we want to control and manipulate and dominate, Christ shows us how we should relate, how we should love, how we should serve, how we should say no to our rights and seek the other person's good. With that attitude, our relationships would be restored, our relationships would work. The problem is, of course, we find it very hard to do all this. It's no good just having this image, this true image, held up for us to see. We can't get there on our own. We need to be connected to this image. We need to have it sort of brought into our lives. So turn over the page to page 1184. And listen to how Paul describes being a Christian. Chapter 3 and verse 9. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Being renewed in knowledge in the image of God. Becoming a Christian doesn't just mean you're reconciled to God, as chapter 1 says. It means, as verse 10 says, we have a new self. We are given a new self. And that self is being renewed in the image of God. In other words, becoming a Christian and living as a Christian means we are reconciled to God, and then he works in us to make us his image, to restore us to his image. He changes us on the inside. He empowers us so that we live out his image in our lives and in our relationships, so that we live as men and women, loving and serving, equal but different. Of course, it's not perfect now. He doesn't make Christians perfect now. Our tendency to manipulate and dominate still affects all our relationships. But God is restoring us, and he promises one day in heaven we will be completely restored. We will be that perfect image again. And then we will be all we were made to be, all we were meant to be. Maria, reciting her worthiness to herself, is trying to create a new image. But it's the wrong image, and it won't work. In Christ, we are given a new self, a new image, and it's the right one. And because it's the right one, it works. It's what we were created to be. That is what Christ offers you. It's what he offers all of us. He offers you your true self to be restored. Restores to all you were made to be. And restores to the God who made you to be all of that. Why don't we take a moment of quiet? Just think about these things. We might like to pray if we'd like to. And then we'll continue our service.